Meeting will come to order. We have a quorum, so we're ready to go. May I have a motion to approve the meetings for January 26, 2007? Representative Dominguez moves to approve the minutes for January 26, 2007. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes for January 26, 2007 are approved. The first bill we're going to take up this morning is House File 137, Representative Hawes and Representative Severson. Representative Hawes, would you like to move your bill to get it before the committee?
I would, Mr. Chair. I have two small amendments. Should I have those read in first?
Yes, if you want to move those to get them into the bill into the shape you would like to see it.
The amendments, I'm sorry, I attempted to have these for you, but somehow the computer and I were not agreeing, I guess. But anyway, line item 1.1. We move to amend House File number 137 as follows. Line item 1.2, page 1, line 21, delete periodically. That is 1.2, page 1, line 21, delete periodically. Page 1, line 24, before discharge, insert honorably discharged. I would now move the House File 137 as amended to be heard.
Mr. Chairman, that amendment is being handed out right now.
Oh, okay. Just a moment. We'll look at it.
Both of these, while you're being passed out, both of these were recommendations of the that came up in the hearing at the Senate. So if this bill passes as proposed and amended, it would be matching the Senate bill.
Okay, does everybody have a copy of the amendment now? Okay, again, can you move your amendment?
I would so move the amendment as, I would move the bill as amended. Would that be proper?
We'll move the amendment.
I move the amendment.
And members, any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. Now, do I need to move the bill down?
No, go ahead.
Thank you. House File 137 asks the Commissioner of Administration to expand the targeted business, small business targeted groups to include veteran-owned small businesses, veteran-owned and operated small businesses. There are 600 of those types of businesses in Minnesota that are registered. We hope that would expand that. These businesses would be eligible for 25% of the gross of the contracts that are prescribed under this law. It would not be knocking out the other minority groups, but it would be providing competition within that group. Any of the minority groups, or now, if you so wish, the veterans groups would be bidding within that group, and they would have a 6% buffer for that area. A couple areas where you can really try to understand why this would be important is that we, of course, want our veterans to come back to Minnesota, and this would be very motivating for them to do so. In businesses such as security, EMS, and medical businesses, it kind of tunes in, I bet those are just the type of people that you would want to have your back, both in when they were serving and both in peace. I have with me today Representative Severson, who has been working hand-in-hand and lends a knowledge to this, because he has been working the last 2 years with an ad hoc committee called MAG, a Military Action Group. And I would now give the microphone to Mr. Severson.
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hawes. This is one of numerous initiatives in the government, governor's bill, that had been brought forward to the MAG, and part of this process was not so much to give the veteran-owned businesses advantage, but part of the process that we saw in the mobilization of a lot of our National Guard members who were being called active duty to go over and participate in the war on terror was when they come back, many of their businesses were hanging by a shoestring because they were gone for a year or more, and their businesses were not let over to someone else, or if they were, it was in a tenuous position. And we had several get-togethers where we said, well, how can we fix this this process? And part of that process was through the SBA, there were certain loans that were available. We really had a hard time trying to match the two businesses. In other words, there were veteran-owned businesses as they were coming back, and there may be a one-person business, or they may have four or five people on them. But they were coming back, and they were finding their business in a bit of a shambles and really having a hard time regenerating. Our purpose in this bill is really to say, you know what, we understand that they run into issues, particularly during this time of the global war on terror, where the reservists are called up in unprecedented numbers to participate in this action. And we want to make Minnesota a place where a veteran can be part of the military and also succeed in the business sector when they're not part of that military. This is one of the initiatives that we want to push forward to say, you know, we recognize that you are making a sacrifice for the people of Minnesota and for the people of this nation, and that this is one of the ways we can say, you know what, thanks for doing this, but also we are going to give you a little bit of a consideration for your participation in the National Guard if you are a veteran-owned business. And so I think this is it's not a huge initiative, but it's something that sends a signal through our veterans that says, we understand the sacrifices you're making, and we want to take that into consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Severson. Thank you, Chair. If you think of this, is there's 22 initiatives in the governor's omnibus bill somewhere along the line, which hopefully eventually will be getting to all these committees. But I think if you think of it as a total picture, and this is the first but significant stroke of paint that goes on there, and when we're done, Minnesota will be painted as a Minnesota-friendly veteran state. The bordering states do not have a similar bill, and so it will be an advantage in competition. Colorado does, however, have, and I understand that it's working well for them.
Anything further? Okay. Do you have people here who would like to testify to the bill?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I believe you have the Ms. Berlay is on the list there. Do you want to have her come up and testify, or would you rather have the Department of Administration come up and testify first?
Let's start with the Department, and we'll go from there.
Okay.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Kent Allen. I'm the Director of the Materials Management Division in the Department of Administration.
Go ahead, Mr. Allen.
I would be here primarily to answer any questions you have about the program that exists and how veterans could be integrated into that program. We do have an existing program that covers female-owned, minority-owned, and disabled-owned businesses. If it's the policy will of the legislature to include veterans in that group, that certainly is something that can be added. One of the things that might be helpful in terms of some context is for female and minority-owned businesses, we're required by court decisions to do what's called a disparity study. The governor in his budget this year does have a request for $850,000 to do that very complex statistical analysis of the use of female and minority-owned businesses in the state. And with respect to race and gender, we are compelled by these court decisions to have formal statistical evidence of past discrimination before we can award a preference to businesses based on the race or gender of their owner. That same standard wouldn't apply to veteran-owned businesses. So if you chose to include veterans in the program, we would not need to do that sort of analysis. We would need to certify that the businesses are owned and operated by qualified veterans. I'm happy to answer any questions you might have about how the current program operates or how these new provisions could be incorporated into it.
Thank you. Any questions from the members? Representative Pingelstad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Allen, you mentioned about the disabled already having a preference in your process. And I'm wondering if when we make this change to veterans, what would happen if there's a disabled veteran? Do they get like double points or bonus points? How would that work in your process?
Mr. Chair, Representative Tinglestad, none of the preferences are cumulative. So if you qualify in two categories, you don't get the 12%, rather than you get 6% regardless.
Mr. Chair, to follow up then, Mr. Allen, so I understand that you put together a list then of businesses that fit this criteria. How often is that updated? Can you tell us a little bit more about the list?
Mr. Allen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pingelstad, we currently don't have a list of veterans organizations. The 600, the number 600 has come from the Small Business Administration, and the number that they are aware of or believe we would have in the state of Minnesota. With respect to female-owned, minority-owned, and disabled-owned businesses, we have about 850 that are currently certified as such. There are size qualifications as well. These must be small businesses. And the notion of small varies across different industries. It ranges from annual revenues of about $1 million for some types of businesses to as much as $10 million in others. If the veteran-owned businesses were added to the program, we would need to do a similar certification of eligibility with respect to them being owned and operated by veterans.
Thank you.
Representative Wardlaw.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Allen, I got an email from a veteran who said he started up two businesses and twice he was called up to either Iraq or Afghanistan, and so his business failed both times. And I was wondering, would he have a leg up on his third effort, or how does that work for someone like him?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wardlow, any veteran-owned business would receive a 6% bid preference. Hopefully that would give this individual a leg up if he was able to start a third business. What that preference really means is if, for example, there's a state bid out and a non-targeted vendor bids $100, a veteran-owned business could bid as much as $106, and the state would award the bid to that veteran-owned business. In lots of cases, it wouldn't. The targeted business wouldn't need that full 6%. Frequently the targeted business might come in at 101 or 102 rather than the maximum. But up to $106 on that example, the award would go to this small targeted business.
Representative Wardlaw?
Thank you.
Any further questions or comments from members?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Stevens.
And a little bit to that point, and to expound a little bit on this, and I think we're going to have a testifier come up here shortly to address this issue, is that the veteran-owned businesses, as Representative Wardlow had talked about, sometimes, particularly in this environment, have a tough time getting started. As we've heard, there are about 600 veteran-owned businesses currently registered in the state, but I think that's a drop in the bucket as to those who are actually out there. And what this does is it creates a focus point for some of our veteran-owned businesses to say, hey, we can get connections in here, register with the state. And really to the end game of the federal contracts under a particular title allow veteran-owned businesses, particularly disabled veteran-owned businesses, to compete on a national level for some of the contracts that we as a state heretofore have not been able to participate in because we just have not had the people step up to the plate. And it has not been widely published. In fact, the state, I think, is 47th in terms of federal procurements. We are 47th, two from the bottom, in terms of actually getting federal dollars and contracts into this state, whether it be DOD or otherwise. And I believe that these veteran-owned businesses, if we can pump them up to the point where they become aware of those federal contracts that are available, we can bring in a lot more federal dollars into the state. And that's this is kind of the seed for that larger vision for veteran and disabled veteran-owned businesses to begin to infuse into the Minnesota economy. One of the outlets that are to our advantage if we are willing to take advantage of that.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Allen. And we have another testifier. Please identify yourself and who you represent for the record.
Good morning. My name is Kim Brule, and I am the CFO for Simplify Security, LLC.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Brule.
Thank you. I am the wife of one of the partners who founded Simplify Security, and it is I who have tackled the many and enduring tasks of formally registering and getting this company up and running. Semperfi Security is 100% veteran-owned and operated small business and service-disabled. Both the two retired Marines retired from the Marine Corps after serving 20 years, and the company is licensed, insured, and bonded in the state of Minnesota currently. I was called here today to give a brief summary of our trials and tribulations of establishing a small business here in Minnesota. I'm a true believer that nothing in life comes easy and you must work to achieve success, but nothing prepared me for the year and a half of frustrations that I have encountered in the process of licensing and establishing and marketing Semperfi. I'd just like to share a couple of the following points that outline some of the challenges we faced over the last year and a half in our quest for success. And it initially started with a security company for state licensing, the transference of credentials on letting civilians understand what qualities and qualifications and experience that our husbands have. And it is untold. They've been to embassy duties. They've done tours overseas. They're experts in security. They've trained the military police. Not having the ability to get the job references and the past performance histories because you only serve with people for a short period of time in the military was a challenge for us. I contacted all the local agencies in the state of Minnesota and getting the assistance to start a small business. I was forwarded to many websites. I've searched many websites. I've talked to many individuals. I've played the telephone tag game. I've left many messages. I've had many calls returned. And it was a very long ordeal to get the certification and the documents that we needed to get where we are even today. And we're still in the financing process just to get the support if we were to get a contract. If it wasn't for a lady by the name of Kathy Newman, who is a volunteer advocate for veteran companies who we just sort of fell upon through a personal reference, we probably wouldn't have known about federal contracting and the significance of being a service-disabled veteran-owned company. I did not realize what possibilities are there for that. We really started the company because our husbands love security and want to be in that field. Most people, especially in the state of Minnesota, because it's not a huge military state, didn't understand the details of military history work and the different details and how you can work 60 hours in a week or 80 hours a week, or that you're on call 24/7 when you're in theater. Those sort of things were hard to explain. With security regulations mandated at state levels as a small business, we realistically will and are concentrating most of our services now in the state of Minnesota. Our challenge now is to be considered for the state and local contracts. We've heard of different contracts that have come up, but we didn't know where to look or how to even become involved in that. And we're sort of being put in competition with the law enforcement group that is here. We don't have a network. We moved to Minnesota green. Our families aren't here. Our employment histories, our education histories aren't here. And to get into a network that would foster that would greatly benefit us. And the law enforcement is really our basic competitor. There's a firm belief that retired law enforcement officials and police officers are the primary security forces here. And it's hard to say our husbands, with their security background and their military background, are as good or maybe even better in the security field. Even still, through the loan processes and certifications and finding contract opportunities, I'm still explaining and teaching details to the agencies that I'm seeking assistance from, just to get the military aspect in there. We aren't your typical small business when it comes to our past performance. I guess in closing, I can only offer a suggestion based on my experience that a system of mentors who truly understand and respect the work of the military, along with channels to access opportunities and clear recognition of military duties, would have greatly lessened my challenge administratively getting this up and off the ground. Like I said, it's been almost a year and a half since we registered, and we are just now starting to be able to market our services. Being able to level that playing field in would allow the ability for what good veterans are, and it would give them the ability to do what they were trained to do, and that is focus on the job ahead, get the job done, and accomplish it with honor and integrity. I can personally attest that veterans are a very unique group. They don't seek high visibility. They don't want glorified recognition, and they're not ones to pat themselves on the back. It was an effort to write my husband's resume because he's like, everything I've done speaks for itself. And I said, no, we have to put it in writing. We have to state all those things, those little things that you did. And he's like, doesn't 20 years say enough? and I'm like, no. The big corporations, they don't want that. They want dollar values. They want contract numbers. They want past performance. They want to know what you've accomplished. How many people, these types of things. But what they do need and what they do want is credit and respect for the service and the duties that they have provided in order to transition back into the civilian life and back into the workplace. And I can say, you know, with three little children that we have coming into Minnesota, they're still all in elementary school, one's still in preschool. My husband still has a career to get these guys through university. If you've any questions.
Okay.
Go ahead. My name again, Kim Brule.
Thank you. Questions from members? Representative Wardlaw.
Semper Fi. I love it.
It speaks for itself. Semper Fi security.
So all your people are retired Marines or not?
The two founders are both retired Marines. We also have our trainer, all three are trainers in the security field. He is also a retired Marine also. Right now it is only those three that are providing services. We are just getting started, and we hope that we'll be able to secure contracts that will bring in more. And a lot of the resumes that are coming in through the networks are people that have prior military because of the name. Marines and military alike are attracted to it.
Representative Wardlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So future hires would be restricted to former Marines or?
No.
Don't you, aren't you worried that you might deplete your, I mean, you know, I don't. No, I'm just joking.
The thing is, they're going to be trained like Marines. They don't have to be Marines, but they will be trained.
Well, if you, Mr. Chair, if you recall your history back when, in the early days when the railroad was the main form of transportation and the robbers were continually taking the mail, and that stopped only after the Marines were put aboard those trains. And if you look at every ship of the nation, which Representative Severson can attest to,
mm-hmm.
every brig is guarded by Marines. I've got personal experience guarding stuff. I'd hire you in a second over anybody.
Well, at one of the partners, he did probably, in his resume, he has done more sea duty than a lot of sailors because of that.
Representative Wardlow.
We'll try not to hold that against you.
Right. Any further questions from members? Okay, thank you, Ms. Brulé. Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I think that's a classic example of what veterans face when they come into the state of Minnesota, because most Minnesotan employees have no idea what goes on in the military. And to the extent that when she talks about in theater in civilian terms, that means in the fray or in the middle of the combat area. So that's not going to get your ticket punched there to watch a movie here. And so part of this process is really to let an organization like this get enough advantage so that people who are putting in the contract can say, hey, let's take a deeper look at this operation and at the people who are doing this operation, and begin to recognize the talents and the skills that these people, these veterans, are bringing to the state of Minnesota. And at the governor's crux of the bill that he's brought forward is the incentive to create a veteran-friendly atmosphere in Minnesota, not because we owe it to the veteran, but because the veteran is a tremendous asset to any community that he goes into. And this really goes to the seed of that, to say, look, we want to make Minnesota a veteran-friendly place because we want to push Minnesota's economy forward. And these are the type of people that we want to be infused into our economy. And I appreciate the opportunity to be here today.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hollis.
Mr. Committee members. And I like the term, a phrase of, this is the seed. But I think after listening to the testimony and giving it some thought, you're going to be able to vision the harvest. And I think it's going to be a very fine harvest. Thank you.
I should ask, is there anybody from the audience who wishes to testify on the bill? State your name and who you represent for the record.
Good morning. My name is Jerry Kaiser. I live in Roseville, Minnesota. And I'm the chairman of the United Veterans Legislative Council. We've came before your committee earlier last week, I believe, and explained who we were. But I represent all the different veterans organizations in the state of Minnesota, the 418,000 of them. And, of course, we are, and I am part of the MAG group that came up with this, put this together with the governor's workforce. And the organizations have fully endorsed this thing, and we just wanted to thank the committee for listening to this. And the veterans of this state are, we really want to make this a better state for Minnesota economically and socially. And of course, I'm, as a Vietnam veteran, we were not treated very well when we came back. And our motto in our organization is that never again will veterans be treated like the Vietnam veterans was. And this is another opportunity to right some of those wrongs from 30 years ago. Thank you for your time. And got any questions? Fire away.
Any questions, members? Representative Detmer.
Mr. Chairman, just
this bill will just will reinforce when recruiters are coming into our high schools. They will state that the skills that you're going to learn in the military are going to help you as you get out when you finish your career in the military, that there's going to be jobs waiting for you in our society. So this, I support this.
Mr. Pay.
I could actually say when I got out of the service and came down here looking for work, I'm an immigrant from North Dakota because there are no jobs up there. In 1973, I was proud of my service in the military, but they didn't want to listen to that. That was not important to them, and I think I would have been a great asset to some of those companies that decided not to work with me, but this will make a big difference for these young men and women coming back. And even the retirees these days are not 65 years old. They're in their late 30s and early 40s, and they've got a large career left in front of them. Thank you.
Representative Detmer.
Thank you.
Representative Pengelstedt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, this is maybe to Representative Severson and Representative Haas, but I certainly appreciate all of Mr. Kaiser's efforts. He's very involved in the MAG group and promoting different legislation for veterans. I appreciate your hard work. My question relates to, with this bill passing, how will it be promoted? Sounds like one of the things through our testifier, Ms. Roulet, was, you know, not knowing how the system worked, how do you get the paperwork filled out, and I know one area that we're really working on here at the legislature is the County Veteran Service Officers, having them get the word out. Can you kind of tell us about how this will get to the next step, you know, assuming passage of the bill and getting these business people in the loop here? And that'd be great. Thanks.
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Tinglesett. And, you know, through our MAG meetings, we've been kind of producing a grassroots movement, and through the last MAG meeting, we had a couple of veteran-owned businesses come. And there is a process that we're beginning now, which is an incubator, basically an incubator process where we're taking the knowledge. And I'll tell you quite honestly, unfortunately, there is a federal program that is funded, and it is extremely ineffective. In fact, when we have our veteran-owned businesses go there, they have been served less than adequately. And so I think the private sector is going to drive this one, but I think we are in the process of putting together an incubator that begins to mold out a kind of a pioneer route where we can go with these veteran-owned businesses and begin to get them the exposure that they need in the business sector. And this is one of those tools in terms of this legislation that gives us the ability to say, hey, this is kind of a rallying point, or this is one of the avenues that we need to take in order to access state businesses. But it also gives us an opportunity to go after private enterprise businesses by creating what you might call a critical mass of veteran-owned businesses and a category of veteran-owned businesses that private enterprise can go to as well and say they have a reputation, they have a history in the state of these particular products. And so this is kind of an ongoing process as we're moving forward, but I really believe that the path we're taking is the one that is going to be extremely beneficial to the state of Minnesota economically.
Representative Pingleton. Okay. Any further questions, comments? All right. Anybody else from the audience wish to testify on the bill? Okay, Representative Haas renews his motion to pass House File 137. Any further discussion? As amended.
Mr. Chair, yes. Where will this be going after this committee?
It will be going to Ag Policy, Economies, and Veterans Affairs Division.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Or excuse me, not the division, just Veterans Affairs. Okay. Any further discussion on the bill? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Who opposed? Bill passes as amended.
One down, 21 left, huh?
All right. Next on the agenda is House File 291, Representative Dominguez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Dominguez, would you like to move your bill to get it before the committee?
I would like to move my bill, House File Number 291, with the an amendment to it.
Okay, you have an author's amendment. Move the amendment, please.
Section page 1, line 1.2, we'd like to delete mandated and or volunteer to work.
Okay, repeat that. Which line again?
Line item 1.0. 1.10.
And you're changing that from mandated?
Yeah, I want to delete the mandated or volunteer to work. I want to take that out.
Okay, and I understand everybody has a copy of the amendment. Okay, Representative Dominguez moves Amendment A07-0012. Any discussion on the amendment? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Amendment passes. Okay, Representative Dominguez, want to explain your bill to us?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a little bit of a summary on the background. The current law provides no commissary privileges, including food, laundry services, janitorial service, and household supplies are available at any employee of the Minnesota Veterans Home. This bill amends that law by providing an employee who either volunteers or is required to work a consecutive second shift with a meal. I won't go through the veteran's background, home background. I think all of us pretty much know about the veteran's home, but if there's some questions, we can answer those.
Okay, any questions from members? Representative Wardlaw.
Are these necessarily overtime shifts or just extra shifts? What?
These are shifts that are required or mandated, or excuse me, we want to take out that word mandated, that are required to work overtime on a second shift, either asked to or referred to do an extra shift.
Representative Wardlaw.
And do they, is it common practice to give a free meal for the normal shift?
Representative Dominguez.
No, it's not, sir.
Representative Wardlaw.
How expensive is this going to be for the Veterans Home to give meals out like this? And how many other people are going to start asking for a free meal at their place of work? As a teacher, I never got a free meal, if I recall.
Representative Dominguez.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wardlaw, I believe that as a teacher, I taught some too, and I didn't expect a meal, but we're talking about the Veterans Home Care, which these folks are asked to take on a second shift. I believe it's necessary that they keep their insane mind going on another 8 hours. It would help their physically, mentally, body to help some of the veterans that are bedridden, in the wheelchair, those of that need some special help. But these are employees that are, again, asked to or required to work an extra shift. And we also will have some testimony to that. Mr. Haas?
Thank you. Representative Wardlaw, any follow-up? Okay, Representative Haas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. I think as we think back of our teaching career, and certainly in our coaching career, when we were tied up in events that were double shift and triple shift events, and often that happens, especially in athletics or tournaments or whatever, it was quite often that the coaches and the staff were allowed to eat at the concession stand for nothing because they were stuck there all day long. and more than all day long. And so this is about what this bill does. If you're double shifted, that you're going to be allowed to eat, and you're coming in a second shift. So I would suspect it would be hard pressed for many people working at the lounge to say, you know, I really want to charge you. What this is going to cost is a significant question, however, and that has to be asked as approvals go on.
Thank you. And members, remember that this bill, as it works through the process, if it goes to a finance committee, there will be a fiscal note at that time. So, Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dominguez, are the workers at the Veterans Home unionized?
I believe so.
Representative Severson.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I would have a question as to, wouldn't this be more appropriate to be a negotiating issue within the contract agreement of the nurses at the local Veterans Home? My concern with this, Mr. Chair, is that this sets a precedence that often we kind of view as trying to help a particular group or organization, but what it really does is it kind of opens up Pandora's box to a whole bunch of other organizations that say, they got it over here, we should be able to get it over there. And I guess a follow-on to that would be, I believe in the union negotiations that any time you're doing, and I'm maybe wrong in this, any time you're doing overtime, you are entitled to time and a half. So if that's in fact the case, then they're getting paid extra, but then we're going to allow them to, we're going to mandate, actually, that they receive a free meal, and I've got some real concerns with the precedence that that sets.
And maybe some of the testifiers coming can address those issues, too.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Severson. That is a good question, and I think that as we have our presenters, I think they could answer some of those questions.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Billy.
Mr. Chair and Representative Severson, it appears to me that the reason that we need to deal with this here is that the language that we're amending prohibits this. So it's already in statute the other direction, and it would seem that it would take legislation to remove that.
Anything further, members? Representative Wolf.
I think, Mr. Chair, then possibly amend 1.11 to alleviate that concern. Instead of saying shall be allowed, may be allowed, and that would give leeway to the whatever home wants to offer a free meal. Representative Dominguez.
Representative Dominguez.
What do you think of that? Is that an idea or not?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
If you look at line 1.11, where it says shall be allowed, change that to may be allowed, and maybe that would give some comfort.
I'm fine with that. Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Okay, Representative Dominguez, this is okay with you?
Mr. Chair, yes, it is. I think that'll be a good change.
Okay,
so I'll move that.
Okay, the amendment has been moved, and everybody has the change. Okay, any further discussion,
Mr. Chair? Representative Wardlow, who then would determine if may turns into shall?
The same person before. Whatever Veterans Home wants to do it. If they don't want to, they don't have to. But the, you know, the cook, I guess. I don't know. The administrator of the VA.
Okay.
Representative
Mr. Chair, I think we need to look at the union situation here, see if that is something that should be negotiated, you know, with the employers, with the home.
Mr. Chair?
Would you be willing to table that motion for the time being?
Yeah, I was going to say, well, we'll just I'll withdraw the motion for the time being.
Thank you.
Out of that concern.
Representative Otremba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you have an idea of how many employees this might entail?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think when we have our testimony, I think that question would be relevant to the folks that are testifying.
Thank you.
Further questions, members?
Mr. Chair, I didn't understand. Was the amendment from changing shall to may, was that removed?
Tabled.
Yes, it is. Okay, anything further? Bring up your next testifier.
Mr. Chair, our next testifier is Mary Jo George from the Minnesota Nurses Association. And also we have Mark McAbee with AFNI Council 5. Also we have Chip Cox. Do you want to come forward too, sir? And they will introduce themselves.
All right.
Mr. Chair, introduce yourself to the record. I'm Mark Maxey. I'm representing AFSCME Council 5. We're the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. We do represent workers in the Minnesota Veterans Homes. Including the one in Minneapolis. And I think this... we've had a number of cases in Minneapolis where we've had lots of extra overtime, et cetera. This language in this bill seems like a reasonable approach when folks are working 16 hours, et cetera. As far as the issue of, we do have a negotiated contract. It's part of the state master contract, but it's specifically, these are state employees, folks at the Veterans Home, and we have the health, the HSTs, and some of the LPN, some of the other folks there. But it's mainly the direct health care workers who we're talking about. As far as the issue of may versus shall, the point is well taken that normally these sorts of issues are negotiated in contracts. I think that the point that was made that current law really prohibits that. It says it's simply not available. So if we can remove, if we can allow an exception, at least a possibility of a reasonable exception, and we have no problem with the use of may rather than shall. My interpretation would be if may is in there, and I guess I'd leave it to the representatives of the home to speak to that. But they may still have the option to provide that without a negotiated contract. But certainly, the extent to which it would be appropriate to have that included, then we would have the option, to do that. So
we have the whole board here.
Mr. Chair?
Go ahead. Representative Hodge.
I think it's wise that check. Excuse me. Thank you.
Yeah.
Representative Blinn and committee, I think it's better off with may in there, because otherwise shall blocks their ability to do it. May gives them an option to negotiate it. Mm-hmm. So I would either wish that Representative, you would reestablish your amendment, and if not, I will.
Representative Wardlaw.
I'll... So moved.
Okay, nicely done.
Okay, members, on House File 291, line 1.11, towards the end there, the word shall is crossed out, and we put in the word may. Okay, any further discussion? Oh, Representative, I think it's there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And perhaps counsel could read that sentence then, starting on line 1.10, based on the early amendment that was put in. So we can have the whole sentence the way it would be read.
Mr. Chairman and members, beginning on line 110, I believe it would read, an employee of the Minnesota Veterans Homes who works a second shift that is consecutive with a regularly scheduled shift may be allowed one free meal at the Veterans Home on the day of the extra shift.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Clary. Okay, any further comments? All in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Amendment passes.
And Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm sorry, I missed your name, sir.
Mr. McAfee. Mr. Mark McAfee. I didn't mean to say Mr. McAfee. Mark McAfee. It's Friday.
Take it where you can get it.
I see myself with respect. Mr. Chair, Representative Severson, it's Mark McAfee.
Thank you,
Representative
Mr. Chair. Severson. And Mr. McAfee, can you give us a perspective on how often this double shift takes place?
Well, Mr. Chair, members, in recent years it has taken place rather frequently. I think the director would have perhaps better the facts. You would want the facts on that. I know, anecdotally, it takes place quite frequently. And the issue from our standpoint is that many of our members, in certain cases, they're on their first shift, and then they find out when they're working that first shift that then they have to work a second shift. So it's a bit, and that can occur in other jobs as well, but it makes it a bit difficult to plan ahead, to even bring one's own, extra lunch with. There may not be a lot of, there may be little or no time. The second shift could perhaps start soon or even immediately after the first one. But as far as the incidence of it, I would defer to the director of the home to speak to that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if we could, I guess that part of it, and then I'd have some serious questions in terms of our whole process here, because if we're asking nurses who are crucial to the welfare of our veterans over at their home board, how effective their service can be after 16 hours, after 15 hours, after, if you go down to 12 hours on a shift and you're asked to go deal with a situation that sometimes can require, some discerning skills, just how effective that whole process is. And so I guess that's kind of a side concern here. And as I was reading through the statute, Mr. Chair, Representative Doty was correct. That is currently, the way it's written is, no commissary privileges including food, laundry service, janitorial service, and household supplies shall be furnished to any employee of the state veterans home. And it'd be kind of interesting to get some history on that, but when we're talking about no commissary privileges, does that preclude them from buying a lunch at market rate, or does that preclude them from getting a veteran or a special rate on a lunch? Or is the initiative of this bill just to say, hey, you got to give them a half hour between breaks so that they can at least get lunch? So those are some of the questions that I have, and hopefully we can have that addressed by some of the testifiers.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Severson. Anything further, Mr. McAfee?
No, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. McAfee. Representative Dominguez, who do you wish to testify?
Mr. Chair, Mary Jo George from the Minnesota Nurses Association.
All right, thank you. State your name and who you represent for the record.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Mary Jo George, and I'm the Government Affairs Staff Specialist with the Minnesota Nurses. Minnesota nurses represent about 20,000 registered nurses statewide, including our nurses working in state services in such areas as mental health, corrections, and, of course, at our veterans' home.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. George, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you. We would like to just extend our support for this bill. I think, as Mark had said, I think what the deal is usually if people are asked to work overtime, it's unexpected. And so they didn't know that they were going to work overtime, so they didn't plan to bring a lunch or a meal. So we think this is really a simple gesture to do that. Quite frankly, though, this hasn't been an issue that we had heard from our membership. I think it came more from AFSCME. because I think one of the things that we've been struggling with out at the Veterans Home is our perception that there is an overuse of mandatory overtime. So we really appreciate your comments about how effective people can be. We think it's a different issue for a different bill, but we do feel that we would like some limits on it, and that is why we went to Representative Dominguez to get the language on the amendment to delete the words mandatory or voluntary, because we know employers should be able to use mandation, but we felt at this point we have a state law that actually allows our private sector nurses to say no to overtime if they feel unsafe. And so we are interested in exploring that avenue for our state vets, but again, we'd like to probably bring that forward in another bill on another day. But again, we see this as a very simple gesture because we do think that there might be an overuse of this mandation, but we may disagree with the Vets Home Board on that too. So thank you.
All right, thanks. Representative Bodie.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Mr. George, is this universal in the nursing profession, or is this overtime, double time, more prevalent in the nursing home at Veterans?
Mr. Chair, Representative Doty,
I would say that it's in part been a problem universally due to, in fact, the nursing shortage, but also, the schedules of hospitals and long-term care facilities. But I think we've done a better job in our acute care settings in being able to negotiate some of the limits that. But when we drafted this law 3 years ago, we thought that protection would extend to all nurses working in the long-term care arena and acute care, but the way we drafted it is sort of a technical change that we're going to have to make because it wouldn't cover the Veterans Home long-term care facility because it was those that are licensed by the Department of Health. And the Vets Home Board, our understanding, it's not actually licensed by the Department of Health. So, basically we think it's an issue that has been a long-standing issue that we've been advocating to reduce, mandatory overtime because we think it does impact quality of care. And I think we've done a better job of limiting the use in the acute care arena.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, any further questions? All right. Thank you, Ms. George.
I guess I'm up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Charles Cox. I am the interim executive director of the Minnesota Veterans Homes. I represent five homes throughout the state with about 1,000 residents living in those facilities.
All right. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Cox.
Thank you. First clarification, we are licensed by the state by the health department, although we are not surveyed under the federal guidelines for Medicaid and Medicare, but we are licensed facilities, all five of our facilities are licensed. We do support the bill. We do want to give our employees that have to stay over to care for our veterans a meal. A lot of them do not come prepared to stay an additional shift. Usually they find out in the last hour or two of their shift that there is overtime needed. Some volunteer, unfortunately, sometimes we have to mandate. If we don't use our own in-house staff, then we need to go to what's called pool staff, agency staff. And those are people that work for an agency and contract to come in. We would prefer to use our own employees as much as we can to care for our veterans. You asked some questions about the cost of this meal program, and I did calculate that out based on raw food costs at our homes, and this is about a $5,000 obligation that we would have towards giving employees a meal when they work two shifts in a row. This is not only for the nursing staff, but also any housekeeper, any maintenance person throughout the agency that would be required to stay for an extra period of time. I calculated how many shifts that would be, and that's about 2,300 shifts through the agency for the, I believe there's close to 800 employees in our agency. I again support the bill as it's written. I think it's the least we can do is give a meal to a person who volunteers to stay extra to care for our veterans.
Representative Finkelstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Cox, first of all, I want to say thank you to Mr. Cox for all his hard work at the vet's home. I know he's come in during a time of transition, and there's a lot of things going on right now, and things are being improved, and I really appreciate that. My specific question is relates to the $5,000 cost on the raw food cost. And I know Representative Severson had asked earlier about having the employees actually pay for that. And you said with 2,300 shifts, so that's about $2 to pay for that meal. And then you also mentioned that, you know, if this person who's on your staff doesn't stay, then you have to use the pool staff. Can you tell us kind of the costs related to that? I'm assuming the pool staff is more expensive to use than the other staff. And is this $2 issue a factor? I mean, would they not work the extra shift if they had to pay $2 for their meal versus getting the meal free? Can you kind of give us an idea how that would work?
Okay. Mr. Cox. Thank you. Pool staff is very expensive, as everybody knows, and I think Mary Jo could probably quote those prices better than I could, maybe. But typically you're paying about $50 an hour for an RN out of the pool. You're paying about $25 to $30 for an LPN, and those are I'm taking off the top of my head. We pay our employees time and a half when they stay over and work beyond their 8 hours. The $2 in raw food costs that it would cost to feed an employee, I think, is a nice, it's more of a morale issue for the employees that, hey, we appreciate you sticking around. We know you probably didn't come with two lunches today, so could we offer you something to eat as our small way of saying thank you for staying over. A lot of our people stay over voluntarily. Our mandation has decreased dramatically. And I guess to answer the question, it's more of a morale thing. Here's a lunch. We do charge $3.50 for an employee to eat lunch. Say, for instance, they want to eat in our cafeteria. It costs $3.50 for an employee to eat in our cafeteria. We try to keep prices low to encourage staff to stay on campus. They do get a half-hour lunch break. A half-hour doesn't go very far, and it's better to keep your staff on the campus by allowing them to eat a good meal at a reasonable cost. You can't buy much at McDonald's for $3.50 anymore.
Good representative things that are, let's see, further questions? Any further questions? Oh, Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you were to bring in someone from the outside, they would to fill that because nobody wants to volunteer and you don't want to force somebody to come. Well, people coming from the outside, that would be their first shift, wouldn't it? So they wouldn't get the free lunch anyway.
That is correct, sir.
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Cox. And I guess one of my major concerns on this issue is that what we're doing here is we're setting up a flow of policy here that basically says we are encouraging people to take a second shift here. And my concern is for the veterans that are being served, it may incur a little bit more significant cost to go outside and bring a nurse in. But the bottom line on it is when you've got somebody that's going code red, and there's a nurse that's been on duty on her feet for the last, or he, for the last 14 hours, how quick is that response time going to be? And is it going to be crucial that those individuals there are on the top of their game? And so there's a part of me that's the conservative that says, yeah, let's do it for the cheapest buck. There's another part of me that says, we've got some very precious customers here, and I want to make sure that they're taken care of optimally. The other issue that I've got with this is that it also sets a precedence, and my hopes would be that the precedence would be isolated to this particular veteran's home, and the way it's written, or the way we do things around here, once you set something into law, everybody else takes a look at that and says, hey, they did it, we can do it. And so, unless you have some kind of legislative intent language that's attached to this particular provision, I would be inclined to vote against this bill. The two reasons that I just stated, and if those can be fixed, you know, before it goes down to the next committee or be included, I think then I could probably support the bill. So I those are just a couple of my observations, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the bill coming forward and bringing this issue to the light of the committee.
Okay, any further comments? Representative Otremba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would hope that the administrator would liking their employees enough that they wouldn't abuse them, and I would trust that they would do that and would only happen when you had to. Those pool things, I think, in high areas are sometimes $75 an hour, and that's a lot of money.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Todd.
The other thing is when you go to the pool, you're getting someone that may or may not have ever worked in your facility, do not know how your policies are, do not know your residents, are basically a foreigner that you're bringing in for an $8 shift. We don't want to work our employees more than 8 hours a day. But sometimes you just don't have a choice. And we feel that using our own employees is a better plan than using a stranger in our facility. We, again, try our very best. Overtime is not something we want to do, but you get a flu epidemic come through, you have enough people that call in, you're forced to do something, and you have to make the best change. Now, the other thing we try to do is not make a person work 8 hours if possible. Try to find someone who will come in early 4 hours, so maybe they work 4 hours or 5 hours, and then they get relief when we find somebody who can come in. Unfortunately, a lot of our call-ins come within that last hour. If you're on the day shift, you hear the call-ins come in about 2 o'clock, 2:30, and you have to keep someone over. And we do every effort that we can, as I said, to bring somebody in early as possible.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Oz.
Thank you. Just a quick comment. I would like to resonate the fact that you do really need to be orientated in the facility in order to do a good job. And if you're just coming in from the pool and you haven't been there before and stuff, I would rather have the tired nurse, because at least they're going to know where the equipment is and where things are at. So it's not an easy answer.
Okay. Anything else, members?
Mr. Chair. Okay.
Representative Denton.
Now, does this bill just apply to this one veterans home, or is it statewide?
Mr. Chair, it is a statewide, all 5 veterans homes.
Okay, anything else? All right, thank you, Mr. Cox. One more testifier, I understand, is...
No, Mr. Chair, they couldn't make it. Thank you.
All right. Anybody from the audience who wish to testify on the bill? No one? Any further comments, Representative Dominguez?
Just one comment, Mr. Chair, that I hope that we've got our answers today, and I'm not taking it late, Representative Stevenson, as far as your comments. I think those are valuable comments, and just that I am proud to carry this bill. I believe that we need to take care of our veterans. As you know, they have different types of illnesses, and this is why I was proud to carry this bill. I think we need to treat our nurses with respect also, and to have some in-kind. Hope this does not make a presence, as you mentioned, a representative. But as statewide, I think all of us that sit around this table are really very very much thinking about our veterans. We are going to have more veterans come home after this war, and so we need to be prepared. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative
Detmer. Mr. Chair, so with the new language, does this mean that the union can go ahead and negotiate, or is it just that the facilities may may provide a free meal.
Representative Dominguez.
I do believe so, with the language.
Which? Representative Detmer.
So is this something the unions are going to negotiate then?
Could I have someone from the union, maybe Mark, come up again and answer your question?
Thank you, Mr. McGaffey. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members, Mark Maxby with AFSCME Council 5. We've started into the negotiations on the state contract. Normally our process is on language issues. Those are proposed earlier. So I cannot answer at this moment the extent to which it's possible to get into this round of negotiations. I certainly will take this back to our folks and discover the answer to that. Obviously, you know, from our standpoint, if we could do that, you know, we would. But I can't, since I do not, Mr. Chair, members, since I do not myself deal with negotiations, I can't answer if a new issue can be injected into the process at this time or not. But we'll provide an answer before that process, before the full committee, for your benefit. But I would say that certainly this provides, if this passes, this would provide the option to do that. I think another issue is whether it would be still in the discretion of the director of any home to provide it, whether it's negotiated or not in the short run. That's another answer I think you might want. So, but thank you for your consideration of this.
Okay, anything further on this point, to this point? Representative Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah. And Mr. McAfee, I guess as the author goes forward, that's just the two things that I would very much like to see in this bill, if it makes it to the House floor, is legislative intent that would isolate it to this particular, to the Veterans Home Board, because we're going to see a floodgates open, and without that, I think it'll meet significant resistance on the House floor. And I think I forgot the other point that I was going to make. So, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay,
something to do with dementia.
I think it was something about Alzheimer's.
Mr. Chair.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Stevens, I agree. It's not the job of the state of Minnesota to give every employee a free lunch. I know this is not the intent of this. As I understand this, this is a simple bill that is taking a situation where it is not permissible to allow this and allowing it. And I think it's as simple as that. I understand your concerns. I agree with your concerns. But we're not establishing a free lunch program for the state of Minnesota. We're allowing a situation that is not allowed under present law.
Representative Dominguez, would you be willing to work with Representative Severson as this bill moves through the committee process to address that issue?
Yes, I would, Chair. Okay.
Good. Anything further? Committee members, we're waiting for Representative Tingelstad. She had another meeting to go to. We'll give her a couple of minutes yet, but we eventually need to vote on this. Members, is there any other business that needs to be brought before the committee?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Baker.
Just a quick comment. I think the discussion today about the vets homes and nursing and staffing has brought with Representative Severson some concerns, and I think we all share some concerns. So I know Representative Tingelstad and I were talking, but maybe we could have the vets home come in and do a presentation about their facilities.
Okay, good. Thank you. Okay, anything further, members? Representative Tingelstad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know we're getting close to a vote here, and I apologize for running out of the room here for a few minutes. I'm going to abstain from this vote. I just want to make it known on record, and maybe if it could show up in the minutes. I'm an ex-officio member of the Vets Home Board, and so I see it kind of as a conflict of interest if I vote on this issue, so I just want it known that I'm abstaining from this vote.
All right, thank you, Representative Tingelstad, and that's noted.
Mr. Chair, just Representative, if I might, just one closing comment in response to Representative Doty's remarks, and I understand the way the statute is written, it precludes employees from being able to work with that issue at the local level, and I support their ability to be some flexibility. But just kind of a long winded answer on the whole legislative intent. We set policy, and we're here for a 2-year biennium. When we start to look at things in terms of 2 to 4 to people that we don't even know are down the road here, and they begin to look back on laws as how we put it, they don't always have the ability to look into our minds and see what was at the heart of the issue, just like I can't see what precipitated this statute in 1988. So when we put in legislative intent into the language, it tries to tell the people that are looking at it after us what we were thinking when we put that in. And I think in this particular case, it gives them some insight so that this is not used as a hammer or a leverage for future entitlements and other negotiations and other departments that may come down the road. And so that's my rationale, and I understand your response on this whole process, and so that's the reason I think the legislative intent is so important, that we begin to tell the follow-on legislators what we were thinking when we did this. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Anything else, members? All right. Representative Dominguez renews his motion to pass House File 291 as amended. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? House File 291 passed.
Thank you.
Okay. Next meeting, we're back in room 200. I'll be on Friday, February 9th at 8 o'clock, again, room 200. Meeting adjourned.